I am so grateful to be with you again. And the inspiration for this morning's service and my reflections come from an article that I read about 10 years ago in the UU World magazine. It's titled, Reclaiming Krypton: Why a Generation That Grew Up with Buffy and the Power Rangers Will Demand a Different Unitarian Universalism. It was written by Doug Mooder, and I offer as our opening reading an excerpt from that article. He says, "As a boy, I watched cartoons and read comic books, and my heroes were orphans. Batman's murdered parents lived only as a portrait above the fireplace and a gravestone on which to swear vengeance. Spider-Man's mother and father were also long dead, and even the uncle who raised him had to die to give him a proper superhero origin. But the most extreme case was my favorite superhero, Superman. The whole planet of Krypton blew up behind his escaping rocket, and its shards became deadly kryptonite. I was well into my adulthood before I grew introspective about the orphan hero fantasy and why it had been so attractive to me and my generation. I was not consciously thinking about superheroes when I came to a Unitarian Universalism in the late 80s. But looking back, I can see how the fantasies of my youth foreshadowed both the virtue and vices of my adult religion. The Unitarian Universalist Church I joined in my 30s was an ideal place for orphans whose birth planets had exploded. We called ourselves heretics and reveled in our rebellion. We framed our history as a series of exploded birth planets. UU Buddhists and pagans had escaped from humanism, humanism from liberal Christianity, liberal Christians from Calvinism, Calvin and Luther from Catholicism, Catholics from Judaism, Jews from paganism. It was rocket ships and soul survivors all the way back. Unlike most in my generation, I kept paying attention to cartoons and comics as I got older. I got to observe how the underlying mythology of superheroes changed as a new generation reached adolescence. In the late 70s, X-Men rose out of its previous obscurity to become an era-defining comic. Teams of superheroes were not new, but the X-Men had something different. Professor Xavier, a mentor. That changed everything. X-Men's ascendancy ended the era of orphan heroes figuring it out on their own. Just about every successful superhero created after 1980 has had a mentor. The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles had Splinter, their sensei. The Power Rangers had Zordon. Buffy the Vampire Slayer had Giles. The superhero-mentor relationship might be stormy. And at times, the hero might have to ignore the mentor's advice and improvise. But the new generation's heroes were never completely adrift. That wasn't part of the fantasy anymore. Faster than a speeding bullet, more powerful than a locomotive, able to leap tall buildings in a single bound, look up in the sky, it's a bird, it's a plane, it's... Right. Superman, we all know the response. For this is one of the stories that has shaped our worldview, at least those of us raised in North America. We are shaped by the stories and the hymns we grew up with, molded by the local and global events that occur, fashioned by the contemporary social and cultural influences of our time. It benefits us to be aware of these influences, the stories that have shaped the different generations here in our midst. Then further, the attitude and characteristics that then dominate a given age cohort can give us insight into working and planning together. Awareness of these unique qualities can enhance our efforts and minimize our challenges. Defining a generation can be challenging, according to Stats Canada, as the term can have several different meanings. In general, a generation is a group of individuals who are about the same age and have experienced, most often as children or young adults, specific historical events, such as an economic crisis, an economic boom, a war, or significant political changes. These events may influence their views of the world. For this morning's reflection, I will focus on three broadly defined as baby boomers, their children, the Gen X and Gen Y folks, and individuals born since 1993, sometimes designated as Generation Z, or the Internet generation, since they were born after the invention of the Internet. As I said, there's many different ways to identify generation. Our Canadian population is just about 50-50 over and under 45 years of age. This is in stark contrast to Egypt, with, I think, around 53% of the population being under 30. Now, I've been doing research for a number of years about the distinguishing features of the different age cohorts, and there's very interesting distinctions, similarities, and defining characteristics. Each has sadly been shaped by at least one significant global conflict. Each has contributed at least one discovery that has altered human understanding. Each has key characteristics that are beneficial and challenging. And each has attitudes that enhance the potential for community and has attitudes that can undermine community. As interesting as all of the previous research I had done was to me, it was reading the Doug Mutter article that afforded me the greatest ahas. When I first read the article, the revelation of the orphan hero metaphor for my generation not only fits, it explains so much. I have to admit that growing up, I wasn't much interested in comic books, and I don't remember watching superhero TV shows. I do remember getting a TV, and ours being the first one on the block. It was black and white, of course, and there were only two channels, 2 and 4, if memory serves. The show I really remember, the hero to me as a child, was The Littlest Hobo. But wait, wasn't The Littlest Hobo an orphan? A lone dog he would show up to rescue or resolve some situation, then disappear again. Another orphan hero. Then there was one of my favorite series of books growing up, Pippi Longstocking. Now, a regular read with my grandchildren. Another orphan. And she did have superpowers. Oh my, I have found myself deeply pondering this phenomenon and the implications for us individually and as a community? What are the potential gifts of this insight for us to deepen relationships between generations? How can these insights enable us to be more welcoming and inclusive of all ages, of all demographics? Who are the superheroes that unite us? Still, Mütter says there is a huge difference between the generation that grew up on Superman and the one that has grown up in an age of superheroes who have mentors. Members of this newer generation come to our congregations looking for answers, believing that stories of the past matter, and that someone, somewhere, has wisdom to share that will save the planet. Later in that same article, Mütter takes the example of the current state of humanism in our movement as a place where these contrasting worldviews are being played out. I quote him, "The generation that remembers the Humanist Manifesto of 1933 is dying off. They started or led many congregations during an era when Unitarianism was almost synonymous with humanism. And they have lived long enough to see a shift as energies seem to focus elsewhere, promoting spirituality and reclaiming a language of reverence that many humanists found meaningless or perhaps even sinister. Now you humanists of all ages worry that humanist history is not being taught in our churches and the humanist legacy is in danger." That was Doug Mütter talking, and I have to say I disagree. I do think that the thread of humanism and our sense of human agency is so woven into the fabric of our faith that it will never be lost. Mütter goes on to quote a young adult religious educator who said, "Today's young adults, as a generation in rebellion against rebellion, are looking to reclaim and revitalize traditional forms rather than reject them. What is being rejected is the principle of anything goes." Now, Mütter didn't ask that particular young man which superheroes he grew up admiring. But to me, Mütter writes, he was describing the generation shaped by the X-Men and Buffy the Vampire Slayer, a generation of Power Rangers looking to unite into a Megazord rather than to face the monsters alone. Needing to figure out how to save Metropolis from scratch with no received wisdom to build on isn't a fantasy anymore. It's a nightmare. So what happens when we work to create a beloved community with a dominant cohort of fiercely independent individuals whose worldview is an orphan hero model? These folks do it on their own, sometimes being so independent that they wear themselves out or have trouble letting go. They are an amazing group of potential mentors for a newer cohort seeking wisdom, guidance, and the voice of experience. Now, this younger cohort is engaged and connected. They network like crazy. I remember hosting a forum while serving our congregation in Calgary, a few months after then-Mayor Nahid Nenshi was first elected. He commented that he was able to win the election because he was tapping into people who were already engaged. People are looking and are engaged and looking for opportunities to collaborate. This is a different model to the model of fierce, independent individuals doing it on their own. Now, I'm not meaning to sound critical of us over 50-year-olds. If it sounds that way at all, it is because I have been challenging myself and my attitudes, shaped as they have been by the time in history in which I was born. It is important, I think, to do this kind of reflection, to notice and shore up the shortcomings as well as identify and celebrate the strengths. We need to be intentional in being aware of these differences between ages and building on the strengths of each. While the demographics in our congregations may not yet represent that of the general population with a mean age of about 42, there is, I think, and hope, a shift happening. At one of the last Building Your Own Theology classes I facilitated in Calgary a few years ago now, of the 17 participants, 8 were under 40. This mix added a rich dimension to the experience for everyone. The conversations we had about theology and values were deep and meaning-seeking. The experience is what I think is being longed for. That was a bit of a sidebar. Though I am excited by the growing young adult presence and the intentional focus nationally on welcoming and making space and programming for that age group. Perhaps some of you attended the National CUC service in November that was presented by youth and young adults. This is going to change who we are and how we do things. I'm very excited and welcomed by the change. So my definition of superhero has expanded through reflection upon it. I think it is embracing this idea of a mentor-connected superhero that has given it for me a depth and value far beyond my consideration prior to reading the Mütter article. Yes, there are those mystical, imaginary figures, and there are also real-life superheroes. Christopher Reeve was mentioned, and some of you are here today. Who are the heroes in your life, and to whom are you a hero? Who are the mentors in your life, and to whom are you a mentor? As I have been reflecting on this, it has been a journey of remembering individuals who have helped shape me. How fortunate we are to have such people in our lives. And it is never one way, this mentoring thing. Always there is learning and insight for both. It is an invitation into relationships of meaning and worth. A profound invitation into a community of depth, into beloved community. Then bam, powie, kaboom, just when I was feeling a sense of fullness with the naming of this orphan mentor aspect of the generational shift, inspired by an article written now a decade ago, new insights kapowed their way into my consciousness. I must say, it is in large part my grandchildren's fault. For as I have watched the superheroes on the landscape of their young lives, with the orphan mentor lens acquired, as well as my own growing curiosity about such things. Watching the shows and movies, seeing the action figures and the Halloween costumes, their superheroes don't have mentors. What they do have is each other. They actually need each other for their powers to be enhanced and sometimes even to be activated or fully usable. Only when they are working together, can their strength be manifest. I think if Doug Mutter did a contemporary rewrite of his article, it would have to include the next generation as what I have come to call collaborators. This was most clearly expressed in a movie released last year that I would not have watched had it not been for my grandchildren. The title of the movie is We Can Be Heroes. And it is the children of superheroes united and harnessing their powers together that frees their captive parents and saves the world. Additionally, it is their mission to do so that is named as a transition of power to the next generation, which, according to the movie, always has new and deeper understandings of the common good and achieving it. I love that. A transition of power to the next generation, which always has new and deeper understanding of the common good and achieving it. The Marvel Cinematic Universe is populated with collaborators. Only the villains operate with fierce individualistic attitude. And these collaborators are incredibly diverse in so many ways, except perhaps age diversity. They do all tend to be young. There is a mixture of gender, with females often in the lead. There is so many different colors and race variation, and strength is not limited to muscle alone. One of the strongest characters in the movie I just referred to is actually in a wheelchair. The global crisis that is shaping this generation is not an armed military conflict. It is the degradation of our natural world, magnified if not fully caused by human activity, the climate crisis. Added to that now is a global pandemic, a universal enemy. While traveling and listening to CBC, very baby boomer of me, the interviewee named that there will need to be a global collaboration to manage this pandemic. This shift can only happen if we recognize the need and value of everyone's contribution in whatever way they can contribute. I think of Greta Thunberg as a prime example of this call to collaborate. I saw in Calgary the work that we did with the Calgary Alliance for the Common Good, that collaboration meaning a leverage of our power and influence into our community in a way that we could not have done as an isolated small congregation. So as a baby boomer, I cherish the fierce individualism that broke open the heart of the world and brought us rock and roll, Earth Day, civil rights and the women's movement, peace marches, and I have also an incredible appreciation for the amazing technology, giving us access to untold information at my fingertips. I mean, I can see and communicate with others using a small handheld device. And those devices are also recording and exposing the shadows and abuses as well as the triumphs of our human experience. And with profound gratitude, I have incredible hope for the evolution of collaboration as a salvific response to the current state of the world. As an elder, I am awed with the wisdom of the young and offer myself in service as cheerleader, advocate, mentor if asked, an ardent supporter of this shift to collaboration and those who work to usher it in, recognizing fully that this is a ministry requiring all of us. May it be so.